The Trump administration is the first administration to actually take a sort of a stern approach to challenge China and to stick with it.
A prediction of a long trade dispute. It's Monday, September 24th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, getting closer to a commercial trip to the moon. North Korea, a likely highlight at the United Nations this week. California's Little Kabul, helping troubled women, and Facebook's growing charity. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Jack Ma, the co-founder of China's e-commerce giant Alibaba, is warning the trade dispute between the United States and China could linger for years. Speaking at the World Economic Forum in Tianjin this past week, Ma said that people should make mental preparations for 20 years of China-U.S. trade frictions. He said the current economic situation is not good. Wednesday, in an interview with the Chinese state news agency Xinhua, Ma said his initial prediction of creating 1 million jobs in the United States will be hard to reach. He said the previous basis for trade has been undermined. Ma, who announced he is stepping down from his post next September, made his 1 million jobs pledge during a meeting with then-president-elect Donald Trump in January 2017. Since then, the U.S. and China have engaged in a tariff battle over China's trade and economic practices. Grant Newsham, senior research fellow at the Japan Forum for Strategic Studies, says while he can't agree on the 20-year timeline, basically Ma is correct that this will be a drawn-out dispute with unforeseen consequences.
Traditionally, whenever there's been U.S. complaints about Chinese trade practices, after a fairly short while of back and forth, the Americans have conceded and gone back to business as usual, to China's advantage. The Trump administration is the first administration, really, since China opened up in the late 70s, to actually take a sort of a stern approach to challenge China and to stick with it. They actually have a fair amount of support from industry circles, which is unusual. So this is something new that we're seeing, and I think it's throwing the Chinese for a loop. I think it's Jack Ma's a smart guy, and he recognizes that something's different and that the U.S. is angry. It's not going to back down and reach a face-saving agreement as it's done in the past.
Jack Ma, also Thursday in Tianjin, said that China could make up its loss of exports to the U.S. by using its Silk Road that spans Africa, Southeast Asia, and Europe. Are those viable markets to make up for the loss of U.S. Exports?
Not yet. And it's going to be quite a while. The markets, the so-called Silk Road, these have huge infrastructure problems, just huge problems with simply doing business in these countries that need to be corrected first. And I don't see the demand from the Silk Road, such as it is and such as it can be identified, making up for the U.S. market and really the legitimacy that the U.S. market gives to Chinese business, Chinese industry. Take that away, and China knows it's got a problem, despite what it says publicly.
Was Jack Ma's interview using the state news agency Xinhua primarily for Chinese domestic consumption, or was it also a shot across the bow to the U.S.?
Probably more towards the U.S. and really the West and the free world, basically. The Chinese may not think that it's going to fool all that many people in the way it used to in the past. Jack Ma, really, he said things that you would expect him to say. He's a billionaire. He's a very intelligent guy who has succeeded with a lot of the odds stacked against him in life, and he's done very well. He's also smart enough to realize that nothing much good happens to Chinese billionaires after a while, and he's, I think, smart to get out while he's getting out. But what he said was predictable. Be interesting to hear what he has to say when he eventually moves out of China.
Grant Newsham said this is really about China abiding by its own set of trade rules, while the rest of the world is guided by another set. He said at the root, this is an ideological battle that will take time to resolve. These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. China cancels trade talks with U.S. after new tariffs. Secretary of State Pompeo says the U.S. would win a trade war with China. U.S. won't hesitate to impose sanctions over fuel to North Korea. Manufacturers shift work from China to avoid tariffs. North Korea and Iran likely to dominate Trump's return to the United Nations. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, also at the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. SpaceX, the U.S.-based space transport company of visionary Elon Musk, has announced that Japanese billionaire Yusaku Maezawa will be its first private passenger for a trip around the moon in 2023. He spoke about his decision at SpaceX headquarters in Hawthorne, California.
Many of you may be wondering, why do I want to go to the moon? What do I want to do there? And most of all, why did I purchase the entire BFR? Entire BFR, very huge. For me, this project is very meaningful. I thought long and hard about how valuable it would be to become the first private passenger to go to the moon. At the same time, I thought about how I can give back to the world, and how this can contribute to world peace. This is my lifelong dream.
Maezawa, founder and CEO of the online fashion retailer Zozo, did not disclose how much he's paying for the chance to travel around the moon. Musk hopes to begin orbital testing of the Big Falcon rocket, or BFR, in 2 or 3 years, and he was cautious about being certain the moon mission will take place. Morris Jones is an Australian-based independent space analyst, and he tells VOA he was surprised that it was a private company, not a government-funded organization, that announced the first passenger flight around the moon.
It's the fact that realistically, even though commercial spaceflight has been gaining a lot of ground, a lot of people really didn't think that there was much potential for commercial human spaceflight in general, and especially not the idea of commercial human spaceflight beyond Earth orbit. We also thought that even though NASA has its troubles, there are also a lot of other space agencies that are coming to grips with human spaceflight, Russia, China, Japan, the European Union. And just as we saw some of those nations come together to build the International Space Station, we're also expecting an international lunar program comprised of government space agencies. And we really thought that that would probably be the next step in terms of sending astronauts to the moon.
Other companies like Blue Origin, headed by Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos, and Virgin Galactic, founded by Richard Branson, are also competing for commercial space flights in the near future. But Morris Jones thinks SpaceX might have a slight edge at the moment.
Well, I think the thing about Elon is that he's demonstrated that he can put a rocket into Earth orbit. He's also demonstrated that he can launch a space capsule and bring it back to Earth. Now, he's trying to turn the Dragon space capsule, which is currently just used for cargo, into a crew-carrying capsule. He's a bit behind schedule in terms of doing that. He's had some technical issues. But I think in due course he will master that technology. And even though the Dragon spacecraft and the Falcon 9 rocket won't be used for the lunar mission, it's going to, I think, prove a lot of the technologies in terms of life support that he will need for sending astronauts to the moon on the Big Falcon rocket, which is the new rocket he's currently developing.
Maezawa would like to bring 6 to 8 artists along on the voyage and said they would be asked to create something after the trip that will inspire the dreamer within all of us. Jones talks about the new SpaceX craft and training needed for the trip.
This new rocket that Elon is building, called the Big Falcon rocket, can easily accommodate all of those people, and in fact, it can accommodate many more. It's designed to carry as many as 100 people at one time, so there will be plenty of room on board the rocket for that many people. In fact, it will be a relatively small crew compared to what the rocket is designed for. As for the training, well, the artists who go on board will all have to undergo some basic training to see that they're physically and psychologically equipped to deal with spaceflight. And they will also probably have a bit of minor technical training. But they won't actually pilot the spacecraft, but they'll need to know how do they strap themselves in, even how do they go to the toilet in space. These issues that have to be practiced and tested before they'll be fit to fly.
Morris Jones said the big Falcon rocket is designed to land vertically and not splash down. As for how common such space travel can be, Jones said it's simply too early to know whether this will become as common as air travel today, which also began modestly and was affordable only to the wealthy. Happening now in Asia, an Indonesian volcano known for its deadly 1883 eruption showed off a dramatic night eruption Saturday. Anak Krakatau, or the Child of Krakatau, has erupted at least 44 times this week, according to the country's scientific authorities. The volcano has so far not caused any disruptions. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're starting out your week with us on VOA Asia. President Donald Trump will join other world leaders later Monday at the United Nations for their annual meetings. From wars to climate change to hunger and disease, there's no shortage of issues on their agenda. But the U.S. president is likely to steal much of the spotlight as many wait to hear what he has to say about progress on North Korea's denuclearization and other pressing issues. VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir takes a look at what we might expect.
President Trump made quite a debut at last year's General Assembly.
The United States has great strength and patience, but if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime.
He stunned leaders used to nuanced diplomacy, and many are wondering what he will do for an encore. Richard Gowan is with the UN University Center for Policy Research.
That was great television. It played incredibly well on U.S. networks. Trump is not really here to charm other leaders. He is here to make some headlines with some powerful statements just before the U.S. midterm elections. So there will be fire and there will be fury.
While his approach was unconventional and not without risk, it did lead to dialogue. Many will be watching to gauge Trump's tone on North Korea during his Tuesday morning address to the assembly. Leader Kim Jong-un will not be in the audience, but will likely be watching closely from Pyongyang. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has also invited his North Korean counterpart to meet with him in New York. On Thursday, Pompeo will chair a meeting of the UN Security Council. He will brief on how discussions with North Korea are going and urge countries to keep up the sanctions pressure until Pyongyang takes concrete steps to denuclearize. The U.S. holds the rotating presidency of the Security Council, and President Trump will chair a meeting Wednesday to focus on nonproliferation. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley says he will talk a lot about Iran.
Iran continues to be a problem. Every dangerous spot in the world, Iran seems to have its fingerprints in it.
Iran's president will address the General Assembly on Tuesday and hold a news conference just hours after Trump's Security Council session on Wednesday. Hassan Rouhani is likely to criticize the U.S. for withdrawing from the 2015 Iran nuclear deal and its decision to reimpose unilateral sanctions on Tehran. While many leaders will be present in New York, there will be some notable exceptions. Russian President Vladimir Putin and Chinese President Xi Jinping are skipping the gathering. German Chancellor Angela Merkel will also be a no-show. And while North Korea and Iran may dominate the headlines, there will be work on many pressing global issues, including conflicts in the Middle East and Africa, global warming and development. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Coming up, Afghan immigrants find comforting surroundings in their new home. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
The This news from VOA Asia. New Zealand has marked the 125th anniversary of a historic move to give women the vote. It was the first country in the world to enact suffrage for women. Jacinda Ardern, New Zealand's third female prime minister, said the nation's 19th century fight for economic independence and equal rights still continues. VOA Asia Facebook continues each day to bring you top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, Alameda County in California, known as a retreat for hippies 4 decades ago, has now become home to one of the largest Afghan-American communities in America. VOA's Sabasha Khan takes us to one area known as Little Kabul, now a cultural hub for the Bay Area's rapidly growing Afghan-American population.
The mountains that serve as a backdrop to Fremont City remind some residents here of their motherland, Afghanistan. Many came here to escape the Soviet-Afghan war in the 1970s and 80s. This street in particular is home to many Afghan restaurants and shops, an area many locals now call Little Kabul.
This is a small little Kabul here. It's Fremont Boulevard. You can find any type of food here as far as Afghani food, clothes. Basically, the whole culture of Kabul is right here in Fremont Boulevard.
For me, I mean, it just actually bring me back the memories that when I was in Kabul.
This is one of the first Afghan restaurants to open in Fremont City, a favorite eatery among locals. Many come here from far away to taste authentic fresh Afghan kebabs.
We come here because the food is excellent here. Brother Aziz is a decent man.
I like the chicken the best of all the places around. I've tried almost everywhere. This is my favorite for the chicken.
And while many come here for the food, they almost always leave with a bit of Afghan history and culture.
I think food is a great way to learn about other people's cultures. When I step into this restaurant, I taste basically the recipes that are handed down to these people, and they opened a restaurant. And so I think food and restaurants are a great way to get used to someone's culture.
Up and down Fremont Boulevard, a variety of Afghan stores offer traditional jewelry, clothing, and various flavors from the old country. The Maiwand Market sells fresh Afghan bread called Barbary. The dough is kneaded by machine but cut into small pieces and flattened by hand to produce a 3-foot-long bread.
We always buy this bread because we love it. It feels like we are in home. And the texture of the bread, I've never tasted in any other places.
1 triple. Okay. 20 minutes, thank you.
Some Afghan immigrants have moved on to other American cities, but not Aziz Umar, who owns a restaurant here.
I never gave up. It's been 25 years I've been here, and that's why I have an Afghan flag up there.
Because for many who have chosen to live here, giving up on Fremont's Little Kabul would be like giving up on Afghanistan. Sabasha Khan, VOA News, Fremont, California.
This news from VOA Asia. Condolences continue to be expressed for Vietnam at the death of their president, Tran Day Quang, who died Friday at age 61 after a serious illness. U.S. President Donald Trump has expressed his condolences to the Vietnamese people, calling Quang a great friend of the United States. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Becca Stevens has dedicated her life to helping women escape prostitution, addiction, and trafficking. Based in Nashville, Tennessee, she's the founder of Thistle Farms, a nonprofit program that provides housing, mental and dental care, counseling, and physical and educational help for its residents. VOA's Sela Damiger visited Thistle Farms and tells us what he found.
Behind this small shop lies a big backyard. A backyard filled with stories of hope and recovery. Thistle Farms is a nonprofit organization that helps survivors of human trafficking, drug and alcohol addiction, sexual violence, and other traumatic experiences. Its mission is simple: to heal, empower, and employ.
The story of human trafficking, the story of sexual violence towards women, it's a horrible story, and it is global and it is huge. The story of Thistle Farms, though, is a story of hope and recovery, of women coming together and trying to make the world a more loving place.
Jennifer Kleiner became victim of physical and sexual abuse when she was only 6 years old. By 12, she was a drug addict. But Thistle Farms gave her a new lease on life.
I ran away from home. I was trafficked, introduced to child pornographers, more trauma on top of that other trauma. All my childhood training taught me that the only thing I had to offer the world is my body.
Doris Walker, Thistle Farms Director for Local and National Events, says she was an addict for 26 years and lived on the streets for 20 years before coming here.
When I first got here, they handed me a key. And that was the first time in a couple of decades that anybody had trusted me enough to give me a key. And then they asked a very profound question. They didn't say, what have you been out there doing, Doris? They asked the question, what happened to you?
To soothe bodies scarred by physical abuse, Becca Stevens created a line of bath and body products. She hires program participants like Ty to make them.
When the new women come, it's like the best time for me. You know, so I get to pass on what I've learned, get to train them how to make the products, get to train them how to run the machines, and I get to show them a whole lot of love.
Stevens says everybody has a story and every woman's story is different. She chose Thistle to be her organization's name because the flower reminded her that every woman she meets can be both strong and fragile.
I thought it would be a great idea to name the program after that last flower that was left. And the women that I was serving were a lot like those thistles and a lot like me, you know, prickly out, you know, leaves that have a survival by poking people if they get too close, but they also have this beautiful, deep purple center that reminds us how soft and beautiful people are too, even with those hard outer edges.
Recovery and show me how to live just for today.
For VOA News, Saleh Demijer, Nashville, Tennessee.
Many Facebook users are taking advantage of a new feature introduced a year ago by the popular social networking site to turn birthday wishes into donations to help a favorite cause. And it's turned into a huge success for charities. In its first year, as VOA's Michelle Quinn tells us, Facebook's birthday fundraiser feature raised more than $300 million for charities around the world.
Dan Jensen loves working as a volunteer, helping injured sea lions at the Marine Mammal Center in Northern California. He loves it so much that when his 65th birthday came around, he turned to his 1,400 Facebook friends to help raise money for the center.
Well, I should do something useful for my birthday, not just get good wishes. So I set a goal of $500 because I thought, you know, why not? And I hit the mark after a day or two. So I ended up with $2,300. It surpassed my wildest dreams.
Jensen used a relatively new feature on Facebook that makes it easy to invite friends and family to donate to the birthday celebrant's special cause. Jensen let his donors know they made a difference.
And so I said, you've bought a ton of fish. You're feeding it, all the animals we have on site for several days.
Facebook has been under scrutiny recently over how its services are used to spread hate or influence foreign elections. But its birthday fundraiser feature shows the power of using social media for good, says Facebook spokeswoman Royal Winner.
And what's really exciting about this is in the one short year that birthday fundraisers have been out there, over $300 million has been raised for nonprofits.
And the birthday fundraisers are having a big impact.
We've heard from a lot of nonprofits that this has really changed the way that they're doing fundraising. Whereas before, organizations would have to host a big gala or have high overhead in doing a big fundraising campaign or letter writing campaign.
Michelle Quinn, VOA News, San Francisco.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us online at iTunes and SoundCloud, as you can download our program anytime you like. You can also stream our program each day. VOA Asia Facebook, of course, is a great place to do that, as well as our website, voanews.com. You'll also find that you can reach us through Facebook, and you can send us an email as well, voaasia@voanews.com. We thank everyone who is listening on the radio, PSU Radio Patani FM 107.25 at Prince of Songkla University in Thailand. We appreciate everyone who's tuned in. And as always, we appreciate our director, Tracy Carter. Our Engineer Zainab Abdel Rahman and her beautiful hat. Our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a great day.